You are listening to Upfront. My name is Brian Edwards Tekert. And if nothing derails them, talks between the United States and North Korea over forging some kind of peace premised on denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula are set to take place in Singapore on Tuesday. I have to throw a whole lot of caveats on that because the Trump administration has rhetorically at least called the talks off at least once up till this point. But it raises a whole lot of interesting questions. Chief among them is all the parties that might be involved in this talks. What do they mean when they talk about denuclearization, and do they mean the same thing? And that is far beyond our capability to answer in-house. So we're joined now by David Schmerler. He is a research associate at the James Martin Center for Nonproliferation Studies at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies in Monterey, California. He thinks about these things pretty much nonstop. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So let's start off with the concept, denuclearization. Does it mean one discrete thing to all parties involved?
Yes and no. It's kind of an interesting question, because I think when we're talking about North Korea, at least from the American perspective, what we would like is for them to denuclearize in the sense that they are no longer a nuclear weapons capable state. With that said, the way that the U.S. and other nuclear weapons states use the term is in a vast, vague, aspirational position to achieve at a later date. It's one of those things where it's in a world that, you know, is better than the one we live in. We won't need these horrible weapons, but that world doesn't exist today, so we have them for that reason. That seems to be the interpretation that the North Koreans are using to the disappointment of the United States at the moment.
In other words, North Korea might retreat to the position of, yes, denuclearization, we'll give up ours when the United States, Russia, China, Israel, and every other nuclear power on the face of the planet gives up theirs at the same time?
Pretty much. I mean, I'm not sure if, yeah, at the same time and how we'll eventually achieve that goal, although, you know, it's something to work for or towards. North Korea's, you know, main talking point is when the threat is gone, we will denuke. And, you know, that threat is the United States. It's pretty much, you know, it's South Korea. It's every state that wants to see North Korea removed, the Kim regime removed from the Korean Peninsula. So until that time comes, should it ever come, I don't think North Korea is ever going to fully denuclearize.
And Donald Trump's signature on a peace treaty with North Korea, who we're still technically at war with, that would probably not suffice.
Well, I mean, it would be a good starting point to trying to normalize relations, ease tensions on the peninsula. But, you know, I think still the goal of denuclearizing is a ways off.
When people in the United States government talk about denuclearization, is this North Korea gives up its weapons, and the ability to produce weapons in the future? I mean, how far does that go?
Yeah, I think that's, again, what we're trying to reach, at least from the American bargaining or negotiating position, is to first get them to, you know, decrease the number of nuclear weapons that they have, and eventually, if we can, you know, if we're lucky, get some type of regime in that would allow inspections and, you know, make their nuclear weapons program and ability to produce nuclear weapons more transparent. But there's a big problem in that with the United States pulling out JCPOA, because that was the deal that we had with Iran. And
explain the acronym, please.
The JCPOA was the Iran deal, and we pulled out of that when we had set up, to the, you know, situation that had occurred with Iran, the best deal that we could have possibly had. So any type of regime that we would try to set up with the North Koreans involving multiple states and international actors might be questionable at best. And that also raises the question of, do we know where all of North Korea's sites are? So if we were given access to sites that we knew and there are sites that we don't know, that's going to leave open room for criticism on the deal and actually make, you know, a legitimate monitoring of their nuclear weapons program more difficult.
Well, that's where this question of, if we walk away with a signature from Donald Trump on an agreement, you seem to agree that that's a good thing. It isn't necessarily a good thing, is it? It definitely depends what he's putting his name onto.
Well, yes and no. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, as we all remember last year, fire and fury, all options on the table. So I think that certainly caused some concern with the South Koreans, who really got this ball rolling. If it wasn't for the South Koreans, we wouldn't be in the position that we're in. I mean, they were the ones that really opened up the door for trying to re-engage with North Korea in some fashion. And here we are, you know, I think Monday we're going to have a summit with Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump in Singapore. So that's kind of where we're at. Now, on the other side, if we do get a deal, the deal's not, intense enough, or it's not, full spectrum on all of North Korea's nuclear weapons capabilities, you know, we could end up with something that is, not up to standard to effectively monitor and confirm that North Korea isn't producing nuclear weapons. But again, that depends on the type of deal that we get. So you're going to have a bit of it off as to easing tensions on the region or in the region and trying to decrease the chance of a nuclear weapons exchange.
What is the logic of not having the South Korean President Moon Jae-in in these talks?
I think North Korea's main security concern is with the United States. And a lot of the issues between what we've been hearing about what North Korea is intending to do and what they're actually willing to do are a bit complicated. Now, I personally think that he probably should be there for it, but at this point, I think it's more symbolic that the President of America and Kim Jong-un are meeting. So,
we're speaking to David Schmerler. He's a research associate at the James Martin Center for Nonproliferation Studies. That's at the Middlebury Institute in Monterey. Bigger framework of a potential deal. The United States is... United States is going in, wanting North Korea to give up not just its weapons, but its capacity to build more in the future. What does North Korea want, theoretically, in exchange?
The primary concern and the primary cause for their nuclear weapons program, or the reason for them having it, is this impending threat of the Americans coming in and removing the regime. So the first position or point that they would want is some type of security assurance that we're not going to do that. Now, that's a bit difficult with American history, as you know, because we made that type of arrangement with Saddam, and Saddam's gone, and we made that arrangement with Gaddafi, which is why the North Koreans are really sensitive to that issue, because Gaddafi gave up his nuclear weapons program entirely, and the moment that the regime looked unstable, we supported the overthrow of him and his regime. And there's a lot of graphic videos of what happened to Gaddafi after the revolution. So it's something that I'm not sure if the Americans are going to be able to fully offer the North Koreans to an extent that they're satisfied with, but that's probably going to be their starting point.
And is that is the reason that's being cited for Bolton being sidelined, is his specific reference to Gaddafi?
Me and a couple of colleagues of mine are of the position that Bolton really doesn't want to see this thing go through, so he's trying to use very sensitive words for the North Koreans to see if they can tank the deal.
So does that mean you can't really have a deal unless you have another great power, say China or Russia or both of them, saying, North Korea, we will defend you, if Donald Trump decides 2 weeks after the agreement that he would like to invade?
Yeah. again, that starts entering a much larger political realm of analysis, but it's hard to say to what extent alliances with North Korea and other states work. But I mean, every major actor in the region is going to be involved with this. It's just going to start with the United States and North Korea.
On the U.S. side of the agreement, who guarantees it? I think that this is a question that's been really thrown into sharp relief under the presidency of Donald Trump, but has been a question for places like North Korea for some time. They do not change regimes every 4 to 8 years.
Right. So that's one of the biggest questions we have. Is this goes back to the Iran deal, right? The JCPOA. We came up with this deal to prevent or at least prolong Iran's ability to develop nuclear weapons capability. And out goes one administration, in comes another, and that deal is out the window. So that really does put the American bargaining position in a much harder position, because we get new leaders, new administrations, and new political approaches and theories every 4 to 8 years. So that's another hurdle that they're going to have to work out when they meet on the 12th.
But isn't it also this administration in particular? It's obviously unprecedented to throw out an agreement in the way that the Trump administration did with the Iran Accord. And yet these are the two men who are meeting. Can you talk about that? That we've got Trump is the one who's sitting in this meeting, and he's the one who has made the most extreme moves towards making an agreement unlikely?
So, you know, on one side, you might be able to look at this and possibly bet on, you know, if we make a deal with a Republican or Trump administration, that there's no way a Democratic administration would remove it. So if you work with the one party most likely to cancel a deal, the other party will try to abide to it. But again, that goes up to what deal was signed.
That is super interesting.
Disturbing. We're both sitting here kind of shocked.
No, it makes total sense.
It makes total sense.
Yeah, of course.
Very disturbing. Yeah.
The guarantee that they might want is that the Republican administration won't change its mind within less than a month.
Yeah. Well, if we look at the previous deal made with the North Koreans, while, I mean, they certainly were you know, playing with it a bit with Kim Jong-il, it was a Democratic administration that made it, and then it was a Republican administration that pulled out. So depending on how you interpret that event historically, it might be lessons learned for the North Koreans that it's better to try to get a deal with the Republicans.
Is there any kind of discussion in diplomatic circles of novel ways to create assurances for North Korea that the United States is as good as its word?
I hope they're happening. I'm not privy to those conversations, though. I'm mostly staring at satellite imagery of their WMD sites. So.
Yeah. How eager are they to give up their nuclear program?
How likely are they going to give it up?
Well, how eager are they? Like, is it exacting heavy economic toll on the state?
I would say they're not eager at all. I mean, last year they kind of, you know, pulled together the final strings on this program that they've been working on since like the 1950s. You know, I mean, certainly it wasn't at the same scope or scale that they picked up under Kim Jong-il and near the end of his life, transitioning into Kim Jong-un. But, you know, the state just achieved the ability to create, you know, a hydrogen bomb, and they've tested two ICBMs that can reach the United States. This has been a long-term goal for the North Koreans, and they finally finished that, you know, crossed that finishing line. Now there are tons of things that they can do to refine and, perfect. I mean, they're certainly not at a level where the United States, Russia, or China are, or France, other, you know, modern nuclear weapon states, but they are finally there, at least now in that club, right? So, you know, they're not going to want to give that up after they've poured tons of national resources and money into developing. So I think, you know, how eager are they to give it up? Maybe they would give it up, but I don't think they're going to be giving it up anytime soon.
Well, then what accounts for the sudden interest from the North Korean government in pursuing these talks? Is it that the government of South Korea has changed? Is it that they think they have a particularly inept negotiating partner in Donald Trump and they might get away with more than they would otherwise?
For the North Koreans?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think the North Koreans see an opportunity to meet with the United States in a different position that they have done in the past. In the past, they were a third world dictatorship with, you know, spices and echoes of, you know, socialist and communist, you know, theory and whatnot, kind of this exotic other that you see in Bond films, if you would. And now they're going to be meeting with the United States, or the President of the United States, as a nuclear weapons capable country with an ICBM capable of reaching the United States. So I think for the North Koreans, that's important because that's going to set the tempo for any negotiations in the future. They're no longer this abstract, you know, weird, othered threat. They are a nuclear weapon state. So, you know, beginning to reapproach talks with the United States in that position is important for them personally.
So it seems that the table is really being set for this to be a win for North Korea, and quite potentially setting the United States many steps back in its goals for denuclearization.
Yeah, that's pretty much the big picture of how it is. In the late 1990s, I believe North Korea came out with a 6-episode, 2-hour-long miniseries called The Country I Saw, and it was a show it's a North Korean TV show, but it was set from the viewpoint of a Japanese professor explaining why North Korea has nuclear weapons. And at the end of the show, keep in mind this is like at the end of the 1990s, North Korea tests a nuclear weapon, and after they had proven in this, you know, fictional world of theirs that they were a nuclear weapons capable state, the president of the United States met with the North Koreans, and I think they settled for peace.
Okay,
if anything, this is very like a predictive kind of like deep set thought for the North Koreans that the Americans won't take them seriously until they're capable of producing and launching nuclear weapons. And here we are in 2018. They have two ICBMs and a wide variety of nuclear weapons that they could use. So, this is kind of the direction they've been working for a while.
I guess what I'm trying to wrap my head around is, if having nuclear weapons capable of reaching the United States is, in North Korea's mind, the only thing that gives it the leverage to negotiate on something approaching equal terms with the United States, how could they then, during those negotiations, give up the leverage that got them there?
Well, I think, you know, if anything, best case scenario, they might be able to make small concessions that will make the Americans happy. Some type of, pseudo-transparent inspection regime, or at least a promise to denuke, and then some type of action to demonstrate that they're serious about it. But again, I think this goes down to timelines, because the first time the summit was going to happen, we were hearing that they were going to hand over all their nukes immediately, which clearly wasn't going to happen. And once that became clear to the president, the summit was off. Now the summit's back on, and you haven't been hearing as much as to what the North Koreans said to change the, perspective on this summit happening. But it's kind of a very confusing mishmash of timing and what promises were made from both parties to make the summit continue.
Well, didn't Trump, we're also obviously in a political season, and Trump repeatedly said to his constituents that he was the person who was going to stand up to North Korea. He's going to be the person who apparently now negotiates peace with North Korea, and he's the deal maker, and he's going to go to the table. And it seems to me that this is a political message, and that they'll try and make a good spin out of it, or maybe it's just a nice distraction to get us to looking at Trump doing something that looks presidential rather than continuing to look at the criminal activity that he may or may not have engaged in.
Yeah, I mean, that very well might be the case. I think that the Trump administration really is looking for a win, and while I'm not going to say they're using this entirely for that purpose, this does kind of play into the narrative that he's going to be the first president to do something that no president had done before. So politically, that does align with things that he had said when he was running for president.
Is it a mistake to think of the Trump administration as a kind of unitary, coherent entity here? You discussed John Bolton as being someone who would probably like to blow this up. My impression of Donald Trump is that all he wants out of it is a photo op. The person in the driver's seat until Trump gets in that room appears to be Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. What do we know about his thinking?
I think Pompeo's just trying to achieve whatever initiative President Trump set out to do. It's a bit hard to say what his internal thinking is on it, and this stretches out to the JCPOA, because it's really hard, the Iran deal. It's really hard to imagine that there is a coherent plan for nonproliferation with the Trump administration when, on one hand, they're meeting with a state that had successfully developed a nuclear weapons program and we're trying to settle for peace, and on the other hand, the one country that we had a regime set up with to prevent them from doing so, we've pulled out of. So it's a bit of mixed signals there as to the coherence of the message from the Trump administration.
And your read on Pompeo is he's there to carry out Trump's orders, not to try to push Trump in a direction that he thinks is good for the country?
It's a bit hard to say. Again, I'm more of a picture as a machine person, so I wouldn't read too much into my opinion on Pompeo, but it doesn't really seem like he has invested in political interest in exactly what he's doing, more of that he had marching orders to do something and now he's invested in it because that's his job.
Do you worry, as someone who's keeping his constant eye on these nuclear weapons, that also what's happening is the North Koreans are potentially now establishing quite clearly that if you do spend 40 years nuclearizing yourselves, you will get a weak U.S. president to the table and show that that is a powerful move that could then be, then that message could be, carried on by others?
Yeah, that's certainly a big problem and question and kind of thought that we've all been pondering over. But again, this is not just Trump's problem. This has been an issue for many presidents before him, with North Korea's nuclear weapons program being very clear and developing, and no one's been able to, readdress or reapproach this issue throughout the process of that. So on one side, yes, it's very difficult for nonproliferation efforts if we're going to sanction countries And then wait for them to develop nuclear weapons programs and or you know, complete those programs and then reapproach them and be like, okay, we sanctioned you, but you did it, so we're going to welcome you back. Because then the next country that tries that just has to suck it up for like, you know, 20, 30 years, maybe less, depending on you know, a bunch of resources that this next country notionally would have until they're accepted in as a nuclear weapon state. So that's actually a very big problem that we've been trying to think through.
David Schmerler, let me kind of wrap us up by asking a very basic question. Is it actually important to get the nuclear weapons out of North Korea? I mean, right now, they're serving a purely deterrent function. They don't have enough weapons that it would ever make sense for them to launch a first strike to disable an opponent. They've given no indication of wanting to invade neighboring states. If all they're doing is giving them some psychological insurance that 30,000 U.S. troops aren't going to cross the demilitarized zone next week, who cares if they have them or not?
Well, I personally care. I think it does matter because, you know, at the end of the day, this is, you know, not just about North Korea. This is about the spread of nuclear weapons around the world. And there's a much bigger message to be said about how horrible these things are. And even though they do serve as a deterrent working towards the effort of denuclearization, it is very important, especially on the Korean Peninsula, because even though now they are a small nuclear weapon state with a limited arsenal, that's not something that could change over time. Not to say that it would, but it's better to not have them than to have them.
Right, but to your earlier point about North Korea's position, I mean, if your position is just nuclear weapons are bad in and of themselves, and I completely agree with you, doesn't that lend a lot of credence to their argument of, sure, we'll give them up when everybody gives theirs up simultaneously?
Right, but then when you say, okay, it's fine, North Korea, because we understand your limited ambitions with these nuclear weapons, you allow room for mission drift in a nuclear weapons program, and that also sends a bigger message internationally to states that are entertaining the idea of developing nuclear weapons. So while this is about North Korea, this also is about nuclear weapons and nonproliferation as a whole.
I guess so. It just seems like, and I don't follow this nearly as closely as you do, I look at the news headlines. And the narrative in our politics and our culture seems to be nuclear weapons are a problem in North Korea because it is a regime controlled by a man who is unpredictable. And everything you're saying is actually the government of North Korea is behaving rationally and approaching these talks rationally from the perspective of preserving its control, preserving its sovereignty, and preserving its national self-interest.
In comparison to the guy who's going to be sitting across the table from them in his nuclear arsenal.
Well, yeah, maybe we need to have a conversation with ourselves and our nuclear weapons.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, it's a really hard hard question to isolate. But again, ultimately, this is about North Korea, and you know, this is also about a much larger problem about the spread of nuclear weapons. So setting that standard is important. And while, you know, at the moment, I think we've been kind of abused in 2017 with all the fiery rhetoric going around and this, you know, huge missile threats and all the news headlines that are, you know, capitalizing on this issue. I mean, North Korea was always a rational state. I mean, they're a morally horrible, monstrous state. And there are a lot of abuses happening in there. And it's very easy to ignore that when we've been dealing with the nuclear issue for a very long time. But it's, again, not just about North Korea by itself. It's also, you know, the message that it sends to other states that are entertaining the idea of developing a nuclear weapons program.
Well, and just hopefully the message that it also sends back to ourselves, that we also do need to look internally at our own nuclear weapons programs and who's in control of them and who's building them up as we
absolutely
seek for a denuclearized world.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's correct.
All right. David Schmerler, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
David Schmerler is a research associate at the James Martin Center for Nonproliferation Studies at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies, which is in Monterey, and a whole